Chapter 2. It occurred to Steve, as he sat stiffly in the back of his second limo ride with the stranger of the night, that one way to exert some degree of control over the situation may have been to simply tell Mr. Hammer not to touch him without asking first, or at least giving him a second to adjust. Not like the expectation had been exactly unreasonable considering the circumstances. After all, Hammer had at least been vetted by the agency. What had Ms. Romanoff said about him? He was a little odd, but nothing too weird, according to past dates. That had sounded fine at the time, so a little odd translated to gropes you in the car? That had been... Okay, well, that had been a little unexpected and uncomfortable, but hardly a reason to run off with a stranger in what he was pretty sure was a clear violation of some agency policy that was likely going to end up with him not getting paid. Speaking of which, though the guy had offered him more for the night, he actually had no idea how that was supposed to work. The agency handled the money. Was he supposed to take a check? Ask to see ID? Good Lord. He might as well just tuck and roll out the door when the limo slowed. What the hell had he been thinking? The answer, of course, was that thinking had left the building around the time he'd gotten out of the cab at Hammer's house, met the man at the door, and the realization that they would be having sex in a few hours had settled somewhere low in his stomach and crawled around his insides the rest of the night. He took a moment to wonder at the irony of the fact that his attempt at regaining a sense of autonomy had resulted in a situation where he was in even less control. He didn't even know his current client's name or where he was going. Not that Steve felt threatened exactly, just completely out of his element. He chanced to glance at his companion, who was quietly tapping away on one of those tablet things, the blue glow of the screen illuminating sharp features, full lips, and hair that was trying desperately to curl. Definitely an improvement in the looks department, Steve acknowledged, though that would probably not count for much if they got to his house and he opened his dungeon of mystery. Jesus. He was going to have some kind of anxiety attack and completely freak the guy out, get fired from a job he never wanted, and still have absolutely no idea what to do about the money situation. Drink, the guy said, handing him a tumbler with some kind of amber liquid in it. Okay, that was definitely against the rules. Steve remembered that one. Only drink what you make. On the other hand, if the worst was that he ended up with no memory of what happened tonight, that didn't sound so bad at the moment. He drank down a long swallow and then promptly started choking. Smooth. Outstanding. The guy was clapping him on the back as he coughed and sputtered. Thanks, Steve managed to get out between coughs. The guy was smiling, though, not unkindly either. I don't usually drink much. Sorry. It's okay, the guy said, taking the half-finished drink back and tossing it back in one gulp. I drink enough for two, so it works out. Math-wise, I mean, he said, waving his hand in the air dismissively. Guess it wasn't drug men. I realize I've been neglecting you. Sorry about that. You can call me Tony, by the way, the guy said. Tony, Steve repeated, trying the sound of the name and nodding in an awkward belated greeting. It's okay. I mean, you're busy. That's fine. Totally fine. You don't have to entertain me. I'm Steve. Steve, my name, he forced out. It's nice to meet you. It's nice to meet you? Really, Rogers? He could practically hear Bucky's laughter in the background. He wasn't good at this stuff under normal conditions. In this situation, he was hopeless. The guy, Tony now, sat the tablet down in his lap and angled his torso towards Steve. You have absolutely no idea who I am, do you? He said with a tone of amazed amusement. Steve stared at him, trying to see if his mind could come up with something. But while the guy looked somewhat vaguely familiar, like something he'd glimpsed out of the corner of his eye, but never really seen, he was drawing a blank. No, sorry. Sorry, I just don't really have time to pay attention to. and he really didn't know how to finish. I don't have time to pay attention to celebrities, businessmen, whatever important type of person you think you are. He honestly had no idea what to say that didn't sound belittling and pretentious. Luckily, Tony didn't seem to take offense, just shook his head, with a slight smile lifting the corners of his mouth. This is actually you, isn't it? I mean, this isn't an act. Because I have to tell you that you've already got my interest, so there's really no need. No act. I really am this clueless, Steve said, intending to come across as affronted and indignant, but must not have managed it because Tony just burst out laughing. And then Steve couldn't help but join in, because the whole situation was just as ridiculous as it could get, and laughing seemed like a better release than an anxiety attack after all. Tony was shaking his head and wiping his eyes. He had a nice laugh, low and rich, Steve noticed, returning his smile with a rueful grin of his own. Even in the low light reflected off the tablet screen, Steve could see Tony's eyes darken with something far different than mirth. He looked away quickly, staring down at his hands clasped together in his lap, because never let it be said that Steve wasn't a fast learner. But Tony didn't try to touch him, just went back to tapping on his tablet. Steve turned to stare at the window. Through the darkened glass, he could just make out the stretch of highway that led away from the bright lights of the city. In the reflection, he could occasionally see Tony's eyes raised from his tablet screen to look at him. Steve knew he should be asking questions. Get the business part on the table. How do you want to arrange payment? What are your expectations? When was the last time you were tested, and what were the results? Those were the proper type of questions to be asking. What he really wanted to know, however, was, what are you going to ask me to do? Will it be something I can be okay with? If I don't want to, what happens? What if I mess up and it isn't good? Of course, he couldn't really ask these questions. Tony had no idea this was his first time doing something like this. He expected someone who knew the gig, not some nervous schoolboy. Tucking and rolling was looking more and more like a viable option. Clamping down on his anxiety, Steve stared fixedly at the window as the miles passed by. He wasn't sure how long the limo ride lasted. It felt long, but his own jumbled thoughts didn't really lend themselves to paying close attention to detail at the moment. The limo slowed in front of a large security gate, which slowly opened in front of it. A long, winding driveway followed to a circular drive in front of what was a house, only because it fit in that general category. Steve forgot his apprehension for a moment and simply took in the sight. His artist's eye roved over the undulating form and curvature of the structure, the way it hugged the cliff, giving panoramic views of the ocean below from nearly every angle. He imagined the morning light must be amazing. He was pretty sure his mouth must have gaped open and hung there, catching flies, his mom would have said. Wow, he said, which about summed it up. It's even better inside. You'll like it, Tony replied, and Steve could hear the fondness in his voice. Steve supposed if he had a house like this, he'd be pretty proud of it too. Money could buy lots of things, but certainly not taste or the willingness to create something spectacular and beautiful. And there was no denying what this house was. Art. Any other time, and he'd be giddy to go inside and explore. He turned to Tony to say something to that effect, but stopped himself when he found Tony's liquid brown eyes staring at him instead of the house, seeming to drink him in. And Steve blinked, caught off guard for a moment. Of course, it was his house, so he was probably used to it by now. It wouldn't be a big deal to him. No telling what he would think if Steve started waxing poetic about Gary's influence. The limousine door sprang open, jarring Steve back to reality. A stocky man in a chauffeur's outfit stood holding the handle. "Evening, boss," he said pleasantly. "Sir," he nodded in Steve's direction. And okay, that was weird. He wondered briefly how often Tony's chauffeur dealt with one of Tony's evening guests, by the studiously neutral expression he wore, probably fairly often. Steve stepped out of the limo into the cool night air, able to smell the salt and sea from here. He felt Tony's presence behind him and quickly moved out of the way to let Tony lead. He wasn't sure what to say to the chauffeur, but hadn't been raised to be impolite. "Hi, thanks for the ride and the door thing." Geez, he should really stop speaking. Forever. He did catch the driver's lip twitch, though, so he took it as a small victory. Out of the corner of his eye, he saw Tony close his eyes and duck his head with a smile. He figured by this point, Tony probably thought he was an idiot. A pretty idiot, maybe, but certainly not the brightest crayon in the box. He sighed. This kind of thing had always been difficult for him, and tonight he was entirely too nervous to worry about impressing Tony with his mind. He was pretty sure that wasn't going to be required anyway. They made their way into the house, the front doors opening with a key somehow. It was just as impressive from the inside. But what caught Steve's attention was the art. All over the place. Paintings, sculptures, photographs. Many he recognized, or at least knew the style well enough to come close, and these weren't prints. These were the real thing. Tony walked over to the bar and poured himself another drink. He held up the decanter in silent question to Steve, but Steve shook his head, barely turning away from the Jackson Pollock in front of him. He'd never thought to see one of these outside a museum, and here it was, in a hallway of the house, owned by the guy who was paying him for sex. Well, that thought brought some much-needed clarity. Steve looked down at his shoes for a moment. He had the absurd thought that he should have shined them before tonight. They were scuffed and seemed out of place here. If he was going to back out, now was the time. The limo was still parked out front. He could just call it a night, apologize profusely, walk out the door, and pretend this whole thing never happened. Go back to his life. His life. Go back. Back to what, exactly? Everything was just as he'd left it. There was still no good solution to the money issue. No amount of hard work or perseverance was going to suddenly produce the 10 grand a month for a private facility. So he could walk out of here head held high that he'd done the right thing and go back to watch his mom's condition deteriorate further, hear more lectures in very compassionate voices about institutionalization, moving on, letting go, here have a pamphlet about how he'd done enough, and his favorite, the "it was for the best" lecture. Best for who? No one ever said. He stepped down into the sunken living room and walked over to stand in front of where Tony was sprawled on one part of the large sectional sofa, having loosened his bow tie so it hung in strands around his neck, and kicked off his shoes while Steve was admiring the art collection. He was back to tapping on his tablet again, idly sipping from his drink. And for someone supposedly paying Steve a lot of money for an evening's company, seemingly content to let Steve study the art at his leisure. Tony looked up at his arrival, and Steve felt his skin warm, where Tony's glance ran up his body before meeting his eyes. Okay, so not so content then, Steve thought, watching Tony's eyes darken to deep brown pools, heard the slight hitch of breath as he stood in front of him. One deep breath before the plunge, Steve thought, staring down at Tony. What do you want me to do?